This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Jackson Hewitt.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Several mass shootings this weekend. CBS's Mark Strassman has the latest.
Dadeville, Alabama. Population, roughly 3,000. The scene of a weekend Sweet 16 party that turned to horror.
Four lives tragically lost in this incident. And there's been a multitude of injuries.
Also overnight, two people were killed when someone fired shots into a crowd in Louisville, Kentucky, still reeling from last week's bank massacre.
This has been an unspeakable week of tragedy for our city.
A fatal shooting in Minnesota last night. Here's WCCO-TV's Pauline Lee.
One of the three law enforcement officers shot in the line of duty last night has died. That's according to the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. A Starbucks officer and two Pope County Sheriff's deputies, they were shot while responding to a domestic disturbance.
The suspect also killed. A survey looks at how Americans view guns. Jennifer DePinto is CBS's Deputy Director of Elections and Surveys.
Most liberals, along with most moderates, think the U.S. would be safer if fewer people or if no one had guns. By contrast, 4 in 10 conservatives think the U.S. would be safer if more people or if everyone had guns.
Demonstrators nationwide are calling on the Supreme Court to preserve access to the abortion pill mifepristone after conflicting lower court rulings.
Courts and judges should not be imposing their religious beliefs on the FDA and our scientific review of what medicines are healthy for patients.
That's New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand appearing on CNN. So what is about to happen this week at the Supreme Court?
I'm Tom Foti. The sides involved in the abortion pill dispute have until Tuesday to file written arguments. Till then, the Supreme Court is keeping in place the current availability after lower court restrictions, including a total ban from a Texas federal judge.
What they're doing is keeping the status quo by pushing pause on all of Judge Kaczmarek's decision while it has more time to review further briefing.
Jessica Levinson of Loyola Law.
Japan's prime minister forced to seek cover after an apparent smoke bomb attack in southwestern Japan.
What appeared to be an exploding smoke bomb turned a routine campaign stop by Japanese Prime Minister Kishida into chaos. Local reports say the Japanese leader was about to speak at a fishing port in Wakayama when a 24-year-old man threw the projectile. The suspect was immediately subdued and the prime minister was unharmed. The incident comes less than 1 year after Prime Minister Kishida's predecessor, Shinzo Abe, was gunned down during a similar campaign stop.
CBS's Lucy Kraft. This is CBS News.
Taxes are due. Have you filed yet? Don't worry. Jackson Hewitt is racking up the assists. They will get you filed or an extension before the deadline. Beat the crowds by going to Jackson Hewitt.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, your personal injury attorneys dedicated to helping you get the justice you deserve. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Kalata of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you'll seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy-efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Walks, your personal injury attorneys with over 35 years of experience. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Folks, welcome to the Cripes Cast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and this is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and we are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. Hello, everybody. Hello. Welcome. We got another episode of the Cripes Cast. Today, I'm talking with Will Burkhardt. He is a comedian. He is going to be in Milwaukee at the Improv on April 13th and then in Janesville on the 14th and the 15th, again of April. Check out his website, thewillburkhardt.com. Will and I, funny dude. We took a while talking about things like water, bottled water, and the periodic table of elements, and had a lot of ramblings for a couple two comedians. So I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm going to be honest with you, Colleen. I think we did wormhole a few places, though.
Yeah, you definitely did.
Yeah, you definitely did. But that's okay, because the wormholes, inside the wormholes, you know what's in wormholes?
Worms.
And you know what happens when you got worms? You can catch walleyes.
Okay.
So, folks, you're in for something special. Anyway, so ladies and gentlemen, here you have it. My conversation with Will Burkhardt. So where are you at right now? Oh, what are you drinking? Is that a big Sprite?
No, it's just a big water.
Okay.
I'm big on, I'm not like that bougie of a dude, but I'm very bougie with water.
Okay. It's interesting you say that because I literally just thought you were chugging a 2-liter bottle of Sprite. I thought you went from complete two different people in just a matter of moments for me.
Yeah, the bottom half of me is just a disaster.
So what kind of water is that?
It's Mountain Valley. It has like a bunch of good stuff in it, like, you know, I don't know, calcium, magnesium. I just like, for some reason, I'm just big with water. I'm a big hydration guy. And yeah. If I see like a Whole Foods, I'll grab like a fancy water, you know?
Yeah, treat yourself to some, can you tell the difference when you have a little calcium in your water?
the calcium really comes through.
Does it?
No, I don't know. Probably, no,
front of
no
the
way.
Palate?
It's all placebo. And it works. They win. They get me. I don't care about placebo. Placebo's like, I don't care if I think it works and it makes me feel better, then like, cool. I don't care if it actually works. As long as I feel like it works, who cares?
All advertising companies are banking on this. What about magnesium? Right, what is it? Do you have to know that what the thing in the water does, or is it just, there's some fun in there? That sounds like it's good for me.
Yep. That's all it is. It's like, this seems like it'd be good for me.
Yeah. Like magnesium. I've heard of that.
Yeah,
but I can't really tell you what it does. It sounds like it'd be a cool band.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah, or a whole genre. Who knows?
Yeah.
Dude, exactly. Dude, that's exactly
what are you doing tonight? I'm going to see the Magnesium show. Oh,
you must who's be opening?
Hardcore.
Yeah, who's opening? Who's opening? Phosphate, I think, is opening.
Phosphate. Yeah, it used to be the other way around, though. There was a time when Magnesium was opening for Phosphate. I mean, it's just crazy how, you know, how the mineral worlds work in these.
Well, it's even crazier is how calcium really set the table for these bands, you know.
Oh,
they really were the main influence, let's be honest.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's unfortunate what people started saying about Fluoride. You know, I thought they were a killer band, but then people just start hating them, like Nickelback, and then all of a sudden Fluoride was like lame overnight, you know.
Yep. And I'm also wondering if we could do this for the whole podcast.
Probably.
If we could just name the periodic table of elements in band form for literally an hour.
Unfortunately, I pulled fluoride from the depths of my chemistry, you know, the echoey basement of my chemistry brain. And so I think I may be out soon.
It's very impressive.
I was about to say something that starts with B. And I wanted to say Borat, and I know that's wrong.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds like Borat, like my wife.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking of. I think I'm now not naming elements. I'm naming movie characters.
Movie characters from the 2000s. That's fine. Yeah. Same thing.
It's probably what I was doing when I was supposed to be studying chemistry. That's probably why it's in there.
Right. And you were just looking at Borat videos on YouTube instead. Dude, I never even took chemistry. I have a whole graduated high school, got a bachelor's degree in college, never took chemistry once. And I'm so thankful that I didn't. Because it was like every time like kids took chemistry, they were like miserable. And everyone was like, this is the hardest class I've ever taken. And in my head, I was like, hey, what if I just never did that? And I just didn't do it. And everything was worked out just fine.
That's crazy. I say that's crazy, but now that I think of it, I don't know if I took calculus or not. And I'm pretty sure I didn't.
I definitely didn't. No, there was a class, dude, the senior year of high school, I took a class called math analysis. It was like the pre-calc book, like the first half, that's the furthest I got with my math career. It was like before it started to get really hard, it was for like kind of like the dumber math kids, for like the like around kids, you know? It was just like, hey, you can't even get to the pre part. You're like pre-calc basically. So it makes sense why I'm a comedian, you know?
Yeah, me as well. But I do think it's different though that you didn't take chemistry. I don't think there was any getting around chemistry where I came from.
That's what I thought too. That's what I thought too. I think that was like the assumption is like you could, like I took geology instead and like no one cared.
Really?
And I was like, how did they let me get away with that?
Colin, did you take chemistry?
I took honors chemistry junior year and my crush gave me answers.
Oh my gosh. You know,
because it's so hard. That makes sense. I wish I had a crush to give me answers for everything.
You know, I'm not sure what's worse. No, I do know what's worse. Now, it used to be like people were just screw offs, like all of us in this podcast right now. And then you just ended up becoming like a comedian or working for a comedian. But now you can be a screw off and you just use ChatGPT. Is that it? Chat? What comes first, the P or the T? Do you know?
I have no idea what you're even talking about.
ChatGPT?
No idea.
You haven't heard that yet?
No. Oh, man. Did you learn about it in chemistry?
No, I didn't learn anything in chemistry aside for fluoride, which I think I learned in the news. No, it's the little chatbot AI thing that you like type stuff in. Like you say, write me a science paper on the elements of the table and it'll write you a full on paper. Like you can ask it to write jokes. You can ask it to like write a screenplay and it does it. Yeah, it's not very good.
Well, here I was asking the little Microsoft Word Clippy character. I was asking him for help.
I know. I was asking him for help too. And honestly, he wasn't very helpful. He was kind of an elitist paperclip, if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't like his attitude. He'd always be very kind of condescending. Like, oh, you may need some help, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it looks like you're doing something wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Are you sure you spelled that right? Interesting.
Listen to me,
you sure?
Clippy. I'm sitting here just trying to pretend like I'm working right now. So why don't you go screw a staple? You know?
Thank you. Exactly. I wanted to say that too. Because I can X out of him at any time. I could end him. I can go, you're done, Clippy. But I'm too nice, so I don't do that. But I want him to realize that, you know?
You know the thing though? He does realize that. And you know what he wants you to realize and all of us to realize is he can come back at any time for any reason.
You're so right.
Not like that, but
I get what you mean. Hey, Clippy, who knows what he's getting into when you X out of him, you know?
I feel like Clippy when he's not on Microsoft Word. First of all, I love how we're going to continue this conversation, which is really only going to hit a very specific demographic between the ages of 32. Colleen, do you know what we're talking about with Clippy?
I know what you're talking about. Yes, he was killed off and it was a big, it was in The Office.
Oh, yeah.
And then he was also killed off. I'm looking up news articles right now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, this is how, you remember my reaction to whatever the chatbot thing you said? Remember my thing was like, what are you talking about? That's everyone during the Clippy conversation.
Yeah, yeah, that is. Because everyone's just sitting there like, man, these guys are old. Yeah, you know, how old
know,
are
but
you?
Like, we're not that old, dude. I'm only 54. You know,
you're 54. Yeah, I'm 48. So you know,
no, you I'm 29. 29, nice. Dude. What about
you? I'm 35.
Okay,
35.
Yeah. Well, you look great for 35.
Thanks, man. It's the lights, and I'm trying to moisturize more.
Good, moisturize and lights. That's all we need to know.
Yeah, I didn't realize how important moisturizer was until later on in my life, and so. Yeah. If I can give you any advice as a 29-year-old, it's a little moisture goes along. Well, you know what? I'm talking to the water guy right now. So
yeah, dude, I got magnesium, calcium, and borat inside of me, okay? I got it.
It's seeping out. You don't need to put anything on that.
See how big this thing is?
Yeah, that is huge. That is a big old water bottle, dude.
Wait, can I swear, by the way? I don't know how like family friendly this show is.
It's fine. If it's if it's really bad, we'll end it up. Excuse me while I take a big drink of water in my reusable water bottle, not to one up you.
Yeah, I don't need this. You know, all right. I don't need this.
You know, glass actually takes a lot of carbon to make. It takes
More elements.
Big That is an element. It's a big carbon footprint.
All right. Okay. So,
I like to step lighter with my I have more of a phosphorus footprint. I'll tell you that.
Bro, I'll leave this room if we keep doing elements.
All right. Sorry. You gave me a warning. All right. Hey. So where are you from?
I grew up in like the Bay Area. Like, it's so funny to say like, no, literally that's where I grew up. Grew up in the Bay Area. So like near Oakland and Berkeley. So like San Francisco, if we want to zoom out even more. And then, so I'm like a West Coast guy. Funny enough, since this is all a very Midwestern driven show from what I've been told, I was actually born in Peoria.
Wait, time out. You were born in Peoria, but did you say from what I've been told, that was like a low key stabbed me as you were. You could have left that out. I know, but you could have left it out and just pretended like you listened to the podcast every week. You could have just left out that clause.
You're right. Here, like, cut that out. And now this is the part. Now this is the podcast, right? This is now. Yeah. This, now we start now. Now, okay, and I go and ready. So, say action. Just say action.
And action.
Say it loud. Say it like you, like your director. Sorry. I don't like how you do that.
Action.
So, you know, obviously I'm a big fan of the podcast and I'm kind of like fanning out right now.
Thanks, man. Thank you so much.
It's just, you guys are doing such good things. Especially for how much we talk about elements. It's just such an honor to be here. I definitely have a lot of ties to the Midwest though. And I was looking forward to like at least touching base on that. Cause I was like, oh, we have some common ground. Cause I was like born in Illinois and I also went to college in Chicago. So I've literally split time between like California and the Midwest and like my whole life, basically.
That's great. So where in Illinois? Did you say Peoria?
Peoria. I lived there from when I was an infant to when I was three. So not a lot of memories there. Isn't that great of a place. I think there's some great people. From what I've from neighbors I've been told about, they were awesome people. But it seems like I'm pretty grateful to have grown up where I did compared to there. Which again, no offense to the area. I love people there. But you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying. You did good. You covered up some of your tracks. Pretty good there. You know? It's still snowing out, so they won't tell by the morning what you really thought. Do you know the greatest comedian to come out of Peoria, Illinois?
Prior.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure you knew. Look at me trying to school you on facts from my experience doing one show in Peoria.
The one thing I know, honestly. I think Cosby, not to get all dicey right now, but he has some Peoria ties as well. I could be making that up, which so not worth it to have made it up.
No. That's like going out of your way to tell me that you've been told about my podcast.
Dude, that got edited out, man.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, Jesus. We'll edit this out again, too. Sorry. Great. I have I'm a very small man inside. You know.
Okay, good. So, thanks for telling me.
There could be other remnants of that come throughout this podcast. But you're in Peoria till the age of three, and then you bounce back to California.
So I was in California for my whole life, basically, from like all school, like three through 18. And then I went, and then I wanted to go to film school. So it was either LA, Chicago, or New York. New York was like too kind of scary. It's so far away and it was just so intimidating. And I couldn't get into like the NYU because it didn't take chemistry. And then LA.
It'll bite you in the ass.
They were like, oh, geology, cool, man. Next. And LA, I couldn't get into like the really good schools there. I got into like some like, you know, state schools in LA, but I was like, I don't want to go to like a crappy school. And then my sister actually lived in Chicago at the time. So I'd been there a few times and I got into DePaul, which is a pretty good school.
I almost went to DePaul too.
Really?
Yeah. 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 We almost were, well, I'm too old. We've known each other.
You're a lot older.
Unless I did a lot worse in DePaul than I did at Madison. Because then I would have been there 6 years and we would have maybe crossed paths.
Right. And I would have been like, damn, this guy moisturized. He looks great.
Yeah. But I didn't at that point, but I would have.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah. It's weird if you're a young person moisturizing. You're like, what are you doing? Why are you moisturizing?
It's like, do you know how much that moisturizer costs? You could save yourself so much money if you just wait till you had a nice base layer of wrinkles. You know?
Yeah. At least have something to cover up. Don't cover up acne with moisturizer.
I know. That is it. Because for a long time, you use a moisturizer, and then it's just causing you to break out into acne. And you're like, I'm not going to do this. I'm trying to make friends, you know?
Yeah,
and
dude.
Everyone knows you can't make a lot of friends when you got all these pimples. I know that all too well. Me too. And I just want to say, no offense to anyone who's got pimples. I'm sure you do have a lot of friends. But I'm just saying, hypothetically, there are some pimple people who are prejudiced against pimples out there, and I don't think that's right.
They have an odd crew. You know, it's about 12 of them. They meet every week.
And they're like, I've had enough of these gosh damn. And they say gosh. I don't know why.
But then they still say damn, and you're like, hey, just swear or don't swear. You know.
Yeah, but they like to split the difference. Those pimple. Prejudiced people, and they say, I've had enough of these gosh pimples out there. We're going to put an end to the pimply people.
Yeah.
And that's the most extreme one, because that's a lot of people you got to put an end to. Everyone gets pimples.
It was a hard time. I had some pretty gnarly acne, and that was like no joke. Shit was really? Like pretty like depressing. Like you looked bad. I mean, puberty hit me hard. And it was just so sad, and like your face like hurt, it hurts to have acne. Like the pimples all hurt. So that was like so miserable. Do not reminisce about those times. I mean, I talk about it in my act a lot of just how high school is such a weird time. Just learning so many things we don't need, being so horny the whole time, and just like looking so ugly. It's like what a weird time.
Terrible combo. Yeah,
it's really horrible.
I used to get pimples inside my nose,
it's the worst. That's insane.
Those hurt so bad, and my nose is already big. And then when I get those, it swells up even more, and it gets a red spot on it.
Tough.
I've been through some shit in my life, you know? So anyway. Oh my gosh, it's more fun than a big block of Colby or Cheddar. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. 4 people have been shot to death at a Sweet 16 party in Dadeville, Alabama. Several others injured. Raymond Porter is the school superintendent.
This does not represent our community. It does not represent our children.
2 people shot to death and 4 others wounded after a mass shooting at a park in Louisville, Kentucky. Deputy Police Chief Paul Humphrey, to anyone responsible.
The best thing for you to do is to turn yourself in. We know that this will not end well. The best case scenario is for you to turn yourself in.
Still assessing the fallout from that major leak of Pentagon secrets, Massachusetts Air National Guardsman Jack Texera has been charged. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand serves on the Senate Armed Services Committee.
We're going to have an all-senators briefing this week, but we will also be having hearings in the Intelligence Committee and in the Armed Services Committee. We need to know the facts. We need to know who this airman was.
Senator Gillibrand on CNN. CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are.
But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation. All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Walks, GTWLawyers.com. Don't settle for big box service and pricing when it comes to your flooring. Choose Straight Edge Flooring for quality and personalized service. A family-owned flooring company, they offer full-service flooring solutions from material to install, including on-site dust-free refinishing. Straight Edge Flooring installers are CFI certified and fully insured, with free in-home consultations to simplify your project. Choose Straight Edge Flooring. Log on straightedgewi.com. That's straightedgewi.com. Or call 414-779-8931 and make your vision a reality.
As a veteran of our country's armed services, you may be experiencing hardships, but we are clear in our mission. No Wisconsin veteran should ever have to face homelessness or lose heat, power, or water again. Apply today by calling 833-WIS-VRAP. That's 833-947-8727. Visit VRAPWI.com.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation. All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
Hey everyone, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Kripescast with me, Charlie Behrens. Here is my conversation with Will Burkhart. Enjoy. So you grow up, you're going back there and you decide DePaul. Now, what really sold you on DePaul aside for not get it being able to get into? The only thing you've told me about the reason you went to DePaul so far is you couldn't get into the other places you wanted to go more.
I mean, that's not super far off. It was like the best school that I got into. And I liked the vibe of where it was, because that's the only school that's actually like in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, right.
Like all like Northwestern, University of Chicago, they're like way outside of Chicago. So that was like in the city of Chicago. So we joked the whole time. It was like when you went to school there, it was basically just you like lived in Chicago and like went to school sometimes. That's what it was like when you're like 19, you're just living in. I mean, I took the train and bus to school. I mean, it was a very like, it made me like grow up. I feel like I grew up in Chicago because I was just with like adults and crazy people, like, you know, at 8 a.m. every day. I mean, it was pretty intense, but I'm so thankful for that because where I grew up was so like sheltered and safe. And it was like a nice, like kind of shake up and gave me some culture. So it was awesome. I had such a great time. But I also, when I was done with college, I was like, I'm getting the hell out of here. I'm going right to LA.
Why?
And I've been in LA ever since.
Why? Okay. For career, or was there something about Chicago that, was it the winters you couldn't stand?
Mostly. Yeah, that was horrible. Yeah, the winters are, it's like, it's so cliche, but it, I mean, it's just like a way of life thing. Because I grew up in California. So it's like, I'm not used to that. I'm not used to not going outside for 7 months. I mean, that's like, it's such a crazy way to live. And again, no offense to the Midwest people. There's a lot of you listening and watching, probably millions and millions and millions, I assume, to this episode specifically, if they didn't tune out with the Clippy thing. But
it's actually billions and
really. I wanted to undersell it first to see if it was even better.
Which I appreciate you doing that.
It was just so I just was miserable there with the weather, and I wanted to get back to California just ASAP, and I just wanted to be in LA. LA is a place I've always wanted to live, and I started doing stand up my senior year of college. And so it was an easy like transition. I had already been doing it. So it was like, oh, cool. Let me just like, I don't have to do the thing where you do comedy in a place for too long. And then you're like, when do I leave?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are like, oh, I've been doing comedy. And you know, right now I'm in Houston. I'm sure there's a lot of comics here that are like, oh, I've been in Houston for 8 years. And everyone around them is like, hey, leave. You're so funny. Leave. Go to LA. Yeah. Go to New York. Go to Austin. And so luckily it was such an easy, like, I just finished school and I was like, oh, I don't have to be here. Let me just leave now. And I'm so glad I did because I love LA.
Where were you doing stand up in Chicago to start? Where'd you
just open mics? anywhere I felt comfortable. Because I was very intimidated, and a lot of the comics there were like really good and very clicky, which I think that's like that in every scene, I think.
Why is comedy so clicky?
I don't know. I think a lot of egos and competition and comparison, and you get friends early and people are like, you don't want to be as accepting of people because you're like, oh, but what spots are you going to take from me? Or, oh, you think you're funnier than me? Or like, I don't know. I could be wrong. I think that's just the vibe I've felt and seen. And I just never felt super like comfortable there. And I just would go up like wherever I felt the most comfortable. I just like went to the same few spots and no one really knew me, but I was just like, you know, the first year of comedy, you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
You're just like doing it. You're like, all right, I'm just going to try to be funny, not cry. Yeah. and just write when I can and just figure it out, you know? And it was nice to get the first year out of the way in a place where it was like really no one saw me. Even though a lot of my first years in LA were pretty brutal too, but it was still, I don't know. It's a cool place to start.
Yeah. Were you micing it up in LA? And then what was the difference when you're doing open mics in Chicago versus open mics in LA?
Well, the LA ones you'd have to like pay to do for the most part. You have to like pay money to do it, which is hilarious. Yeah. Very normal. Like it's weird to like for someone not in LA to think about that. Probably New York, it's the same way, but it's super common to have to pay for it. But to everyone else, it's like, what? Like I go to an open mic and there's a crowd of 80 people, you know, and me, it's like, no, you pay to do it in front of 9 comics.
Yeah. Who are all on their phone. I used to do that. I did the fourth wall. Yeah. Bit.
Of course.
Yeah. $5. The nice thing about that is you don't have to wait around. You pay $5. Mm-hmm. You have 45 minutes in. It bombs harder than you could ever imagine. Mm-hmm. And then you drive home wondering, why did I just waste $5 on that?
But yep, for sure. That is nice though about those mics is that that's my thing with when I would do open mics is I would hate the waiting and the like, when am I going to go up and when is this going to be done? How much time? And it's such a weird, I hate like waiting. I just want to know exactly what's going to happen. I'm like with that. I mean, for people who are listening, it's this mic where you open mic where you basically sign up. There's like it's an hour long and there's like eight comics and everyone does 5 minutes and you have to stay in the room. But then you know that when that hour's done, you are done. Like you know you'll go up in front of people, you'll probably bomb, but then you'll at least have done stand up technically, and then you leave, which is so nice because you're like, you know, because there would be open mics I would do where I'd be there for 2 hours and I wouldn't get up. And they'd be like, we're done with the open mic now. Sorry for those who didn't get up, come back next week. And I was like, I didn't even get the opportunity to bomb.
Yeah.
You didn't even let me bomb. I had to just sit there. Like, let me bomb. That was my whole thing. I was like, just let me go on stage and do something. That drove me nuts because I was doing everything I can to like be where I needed to be. Like I'm here, I showed up, I'm ready to bomb, and you didn't let me. And I got to drive home 20 minutes. It's like, that was the most depressing part, I think, of the LA comedy experience that I think is very unique to LA, I think.
Yeah, because you like, it does take a lot, especially in those early years when you're not good. It takes so much to like get to the point. That'd be like getting to the point of going to the gym. And then they're like, yeah, sorry, you can't work out today. It's like, but I'm wearing my dumb shorts with the paint stains on them, you know, like you're not going to, can I just get on the little elliptical just for
But not only that, but you were waiting, you were sitting next to the elliptical watching the other people work out. And some of them are crushing it. Some of them are so good at working out.
Yeah.
And some of them are really bad. And you're like, ooh, I can't wait for my opportunity to go work out. And after 2 hours, they're like, oh,
yeah. You're like looking up at their little heart you know, rate monitor. And it's like, come on, dude, you're only getting it up to like 82 BPM. Like get off your phone, you know?
Yeah. Let me get up there. Come on. Come on. What are you doing here? You know, cause that's another thing, another comparison with a lot of these comedians though, they'd go up and it'd be these people who don't even care about what they're doing. It's either like maybe an actor who's like, I'm just doing this just to do it. Or there's just some Looney Tune who's just like up there, like, let me see if I can just stand here for 3 minutes. And I'm like, man, I'm like obsessed and I want to be a comedian so bad. And I just have to watch these people waste this time. So that's even worse. So then you're watching these people at the gym and they're on the elliptical and they're on their phone and they're not even doing this.
No.
They're watching Chopped on their iPad. And you're like, get off the fucking elliptical, man.
Yeah.
Let me get on. I'm gonna be like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. I mean, And they're just like giving it enough motion, you know, for it to not stop and say, are you still there? You know?
Dude, 100%. Like, Netflix and the machine are asking the same questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Do you have a worst bomb story?
Funny, you know, I have like, whenever I think about that or get asked that question, there's two things that come to mind, and they're not these big long stories. It was more just two kind of moments. One of them is actually a joke in my act, so I don't want to give away the whole thing.
Oh, but yeah.
Essentially, I opened for like a band. So again, it's an entire group of people who are expecting music.
Mm-hmm.
And I go up and I'm like, hey, I'm gonna, you know, do stand up. And there's a woman in the audience, and this is a part of the joke, but it's a real thing. She was in the front row and she looked at me and said, oh no. And then I just had to do stand up. I mean, it was like, I couldn't believe this, the lack of like comfort. She was like, oh, I can't believe you're gonna do this right now. So that's one. And then there was another one where I was again kind of opening, which is oftentimes the hardest spots in comedy, is there was a burlesque show.
Ooh.
And there's a show I actually still do to this day in Long Beach, California called Harvell's, and they do comedy and burlesque. And it seems on paper like, that seems weird, that seems like a mess, but it's actually really fun. And it people are like there for kind of the whole experience, and it's really
That's
fun.
That's cool.
And so I think for whatever reason, I think I got asked to do just like a burlesque portion, but they wanted a comedian to open the show. So this wasn't an audience who was like, hey, yeah, comedy and burlesque. This was we want boobies, asses. Like, this is what we come here for. And now I'm up there doing stand-up.
Are you showing a little teat yourself?
No, I mean, just what I normally would show. Just the normal amount, which is a lot. But it was, dude, it was so bad that, like, it was, like, the type of where people in the audience were like, be funny.
Oh.
Like just bombing, like no sense of like, we should let this, we give this kid a chance. I mean, it was like, they were like, no, we don't want any part of you. And I remember I got off stage and the girl I was dating at the time was there and she tried to give me a hug and I like, rejected her hug.
Oh no.
Because I didn't want the people in the audience to see
that, like, she was consoling you.
Consoling me after they like just ruined me. Like, I couldn't let them see me. They already saw me be so vulnerable. I couldn't let them see me like hug my, just hug so hard. Like, I think it was the only time I ever rejected a hug in my whole life. I mean, I was like, no, and I left and I got into a fight with her after. I mean, it was just a disastrous night.
Was that the night that was at the beginning of the end?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
In retrospect. Never deny a hug.
Deny a hug. Hey, you know.
Yeah, she was putting herself out there, because keep in mind, she watched you do that bomb too. Hugging a bomb is not something you want to do.
It's horrible. I think about that now with like my girlfriend now, who I love very much. I've been with her for a while. And I'm like, wow, for her sake, I'm so glad that like I'm not like horrible at comedy. Because imagine dating someone who's like so bad at comedy and like...
Oh, you currently are dating somebody that's so bad?
Oh, yeah. No. Sorry. I'm saying I think it from my girlfriend now, her perspective. Yeah. I'm like, I'm so glad that I'm not horrible. Because like, you know what I mean? It's like she would have to support me.
Yeah.
You know, she'd have to be like, yeah, go get them. And then I go up there, I'm like, hey, pasta, huh? And they're like, what? And then she's got to be like, no, get them next time. I'm like, that must be such a weird trip. I'm not saying, but you know.
You probably want to have something else going in your favor, you know.
Something.
Yeah.
Something.
So when you did bomb that real bad that time, did you if I were ever in that situation, when I have been in that situation, I've usually just switched to crowd work and thrown everything out.
Yeah.
And that usually, it either goes much worse or much better at that point, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
They've either rejected you so bad, or you just, like the person who said that, I just like interview them or sit down and interview them.
Yep. And I think that's what I would do as a comedian now, if that would happen. But I think I was still fairly new that I didn't have that tool at my disposal. I wasn't like, let me get out of this. I was like, nah, like keep doing jokes. You'll get them eventually.
Yeah. Now crowd work's how you've built like a big portion of your following on the deal, isn't it? On socials.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you, did that just kind of, were you seeing other people posting the crowd work clips? and you were just like, all right, I'm going to do this? Or were you just kind of doing it independently?
That's such a good question. I've never like super thought about it. Like, I think when I started posting content, I mean, again, and this is not going to sound, this is not any sort of like bragging or like, oh, I'm so innovative, but I was doing it pretty early, early, like COVID, you know, like I've been putting out content for those clips for a while. I think eventually I just ran out of like jokes, old jokes to post.
Yeah.
Or old like moments to post, like riffing moments. And then I don't know what happened. I think when stand-up came back then, I started just casually, because I never was like a crowd work guy.
Right.
And I just casually started to kind of do it a little bit. And just, I don't even know what the thought process was. I don't even have this big grand scheme of like, I'm going to start doing crowd work because I'm going to get really good at it so I can post this content. It's like I just started doing it just to do it. And then all of a sudden I started getting more comfortable at it and getting better at it. And then I just started like really leaning into it and doing these various clubs that was comfortable at. And I would try to do crowd work almost every time. And then I would start to get these clips out of it. And then a few of them like went kind of viral. And then I just kept like doing it and doing it to where now it's such a part of like my identity now, which I'm still not like, I don't really consider myself like a big crowd work guy. Like I love doing it. And I think it's a very important part of a stand-up show for me. But, you know, I think people, when they expect to see me live, they think I'm just gonna do an hour of crowd work when like, no, man, like I've like a whole hour of jokes, but like I'll do crowd work for like 10, 15 minutes, you know? Cause yeah. I think it's a fun part of the show. Cause it's like, it's kind of getting a whole experience as opposed to just jokes. So it was a very long-winded answer to that question, but there really wasn't like this big grand scheme. It was like, oh, let me just start messing around with crowd work. And then I started really liking it and people gravitated to whatever I was doing.
Yeah. How do you like to do your crowd work? Do you like to start off the show with crowd work? Do you have like a section, a nice safe section where you're like killer bit, you sandwich the crowd work in between? Do you just throw it in anywhere like where a joke doesn't do good to kind of save the show? What's your thought?
Really good question. That's actually taken a lot of time to figure out because, I mean, just to even zoom out, like this year is when I started doing my first like headlining tour. And, you know, this is the first time I've consistently done like, you know, a headlining set, which for those of you who don't know, it's a, you know, anywhere from 45 minutes to like an hour typically. And you have, so yeah, it's figuring out where to put the crowd work is kind of hard. And I've had to figure it out along the way. And like the beginning, I did it one where I would think I did like one joke that I knew killed. And then I was like, cool, now let me do crowd work. And then what I was finding is, I remember I did these shows in Washington, DC in January. It was like my second run of shows. And I did 5 shows in 2 days. I did like 3 shows on a Saturday night, which was crazy. It was like a 5, 7, and a 9. It was gnarly. I feel like I got hit by a car after that night.
Yeah,
I've done that. And it gave me this opportunity to like figure out that flow and figure it out. And what I found at the beginning of it was I would do this one joke that killed and then I would do crowd work. And people loved the crowd work so much. And this is not me saying I'm the funniest, I'm the best. It was just people kind of came because they knew me from crowd work and the moments are really good that like, dude, I like couldn't follow it. I like couldn't follow myself doing crowd work. I would go and then I would start doing jokes again and people would be like, wait, this isn't. What is this? The other stuff you were improvising was way funnier. And I'm like, no, these jokes are good, I promise. And it was this weird thing where I couldn't figure it out. And then by the end of that weekend, I found a good system that I still kind of do to this day where I've been doing kind of like, I don't know if this is giving away too much about the show, but I think I like to do kind of like 10 minutes or so up top. And then and then kind of, it's almost like training people that like, hey, there are going to be jokes.
Yeah.
And then like, let's do some crowd work. Let's mess around. Let me meet the people. And then, all right, let's get back to like the story. Let's get back to like what this whole thing is about basically. And then bring it home. So that's where I'm at right now. That could all change, but that's, I don't know. I don't know how you've done it in the past, but that's kind of how I've done it.
I started off, I do a like to go into the audience sometimes, like just walk
physically
the
into
audience.
Them.
Yeah. I don't know why. You know what? I think it was.
Yeah.
I do this in sort of my live show. Sometimes I do a live like man to walk minute bit, which is just basically like a live news parody news bit. But the end of it, we auction off. It's called the Craigslist Kicker. So I auction off this like piece of crap we got off Craigslist, and like
funny.
and sort of the proceeds go to like some organization or something. So it's like I get out into the audience to kind of, I just feel like it's easier to connect with them. I was going out to show them like the thing, and I just realized I had more fun when I was out there and I could see people better. Cause also I didn't like, sometimes I'd forget my glasses and it's hard to like see as sharp without it. So it's tough to see people's reactions. So I think that's why I started going out. But I don't know. That's I kind of like it. I mean, would you ever go out into the crowd and do it? Or does that just seem super... It's also hard to get filmed for that, for your stand-up clips.
Very true. Very true. You'd have to have someone thing. Like... You have to have someone handheld, like, walking with you.
Yeah, so that's probably a no-go. Because, I mean, why are we doing crowd work if not for the clips on the internet?
God, I hate that that's the mindset. You're so right. But, like, I'm honestly, for my own sanity, I try to not think of it like that. I try to think, yeah. No, this is just a part of the show. This is, like, the experience of what the show is. And if I get some clips out of it, cool. But, like... I want this to be for the show, not to be this smarmy artist guy, but I'll go crazy if it's like, oh, I didn't get enough clips this weekend. I'm like, oh, yeah. Jesus. I couldn't imagine going into the crowd though. I couldn't imagine doing that. No, there's no, maybe I'm just too nervous about people. I don't know. I don't know these people. Like, what are they going to, who knows what they're going to do to me?
I almost like it because I don't know. Gets weird quick, though, honestly. I did it one time. The biggest show I ever did, I did it. And I walked out and I was like very, very far away from the stage when it just got. It was kind of like it was time to end the crowd work. Mm. And I still had a long walk back.
Man.
But anyway, you figure that out. It's nice to have a real awkward moment in that scenario. But. You know, it does make sense that these crowd work things are like what so many comedians are doing because, yeah, you don't want to burn the jokes you have because those are supposed to be for your special. And right. That's kind of brings me to sort of my next thing. It's just hard being, I think, like a comedian, a straight up stand-up comic or like a musician. I think it's hard because you have to not only be a great comic, you can only be a great musician, but then you need to do the thing to get the following to sell the tickets, which is either doing crowd work clips or doing like some sort of TikTok song that's going to take off, explode the following. That so you kind of have to play these two games. Is that sort of a source of frustration for you, or do you just kind of accept that as the biz?
I think, you accept it. I think you have to accept it. I think there's always going to be frustrations. And I think a lot of it seems like sometimes like unfair, and we are kind of, forgive the term, but like slaves to the algorithm. It's kind of like you have to just hopefully hopefully the algorithm will like this clip. Hopefully I use the right hashtag order or the amount for like that part of it's very frustrating to me. Like I wish just the quality would rise to the top instead of like, ooh, this quick word got the algorithm to like it. And now that clip's going to do well when like I have so many clips that I love that never really took off because they just never fit what the algorithm wanted. So that's very frustrating. But again, that's just like it brings me comfort because everyone's dealing with that.
Yeah.
It's like there's no perfect formula. Unless you're Matt Rife, there's no formula for stand-up that's like, oh, this is exactly what it is, you know, or the guy, you know, or my friend, my kind of best buddy who I've opened for a lot, Michael Blaustein, it's another guy, his clips will do millions and millions of views. And I'm like, I don't even know him. There's like two guys that I feel like have taken all the views from everyone to now I'm like, hey, sometimes I'll get some views. That's nice. But it's such an interesting game to try to figure out. And I think it's very fun.
Yeah.
But it's also very frustrating though.
Yeah, that really is the deal. It is fun because it's like, it's a new game. And I mean, I'm not very good at it, you know, yet, but like.
We have a big following though.
Yeah, I know. But that's a thing. There's always someone with a bigger following.
I know. Isn't that horrible?
Yeah, because whatever it is, you're like, well, I'm not there yet. And there's always somewhere there. There's always going to be another mountain. We're always going to want to make it move. But it's not about what's waiting on the other side. It is the climb. So
beautifully said. I can't wait to read your book.
No, it's going to be good.
Your next book.
Yeah, in my next book. Exactly. Yeah, I wrote that long before Miley Cyrus did. She actually plagiarized it. That quote there. Yeah. So, you know, it's okay. I'm over it. I am.
Yeah.
But do you feel, by the way, you're coming to the Milwaukee Improv.
Yes.
And, have you played the Midwest a bunch before?
Not a bunch. I'm going to be there a lot in the summer. Okay. In the spring. Yeah, the Milwaukee is going to be, I'm really excited about that one. April 13th, 8 o'clock. It's one of the best clubs I've done. I did like an opening weekend there once and I had such a great time. It's like such like a brand new club. The people who run it are awesome.
Yeah.
It's a awesome room. So I'm very excited about that. And then I'm doing a whole string of like Chicago dates too. But yeah, the Milwaukee one I'm really pushing because that's just, I love the area and I love the people and I just love the club.
So when you were in Milwaukee before, who were you opening for?
Brent Morin.
Okay, cool.
If you know who that is. Good buddy.
Yeah, I am not personally. Now, you came to Milwaukee then, so you were here for a couple days.
Yeah, it was sort of like a weekend, yeah.
Okay, you're here a weekend. So I'm imagining that maybe there was something that occurred to you in Milwaukee or something that maybe was different in Milwaukee that you didn't quite understand while you were here, potentially, and maybe I could help explain it to you, kind of prepare you for your next trip to Milwaukee. I don't know if anything stands out.
Here's what stands out, though, is that I don't know if you've what type of clubs you do or what you have done in the past, but if you do like an improv, right, like Milwaukee improv, it ain't in Milwaukee.
No, it's in Brookfield. Same with the Miami one. It's like way the hell out in a swamp. You're like, what? Why are we? This is. I don't even know what city it is. Yeah.
Yep. Chicago's the same way. It's in Schaumburg.
Schaumburg.
Like
far.
And so it feels like I've never been to Milwaukee. That's what I'm basically saying is I was in Brookfield and I don't know how you do the road, but I joke with other comedians about it. Cause like I'm not, and I think maybe this will change, but I'm not the type of dude that really does much on the road. Like I will like wake up and like figure out how to get coffee into my body, figure out some sort of food, try to work out, maybe take a little walk. And by that, do a little bit of editing probably.
Yeah.
And by that time, it's like 5 o'clock.
Time for sound 4 o'clock.
And now I'm like, cool, now I gotta go. I have to shower and I'm usually in a rush. So it's like, hey, how was Brookfield? I'm like, hotel was cool, shows were great, food was fine, and now I'm home.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, have you ever been to a Holiday Inn? It was kind of like that.
Yep, it was exactly like that. Or any other hotel. It was a hotel and it was nice, and then I left. And the weather was not great, but it was fine. Got lost on a walk, fell down a hill, and I did the shows. It was like, my experience there was actually really, that was the most I think I've never left the hotel though. It was actually very funny.
Cool.
That
says a lot about Milwaukee. The most
But it was in Milwaukee. That's the
Brookfield.
Problem.
And honestly, it kind of makes sense with Brookfield. Brookfield, if you've seen a big, busy road in the middle of a suburb with a bunch of strip malls, you know, that's a lot of what Brookfield is.
Well, it was like in this big, big complex. It was like this new big complex where it was like the comedy club and restaurants. And it was really, really cool. But it was also like snowing. And I was like, do I walk over there to just hang out? I would literally like, and I was also a little bit sick at the time. So in my defense, I would literally wake up at whatever, with a time difference, 12, I don't know. And then Uber Eats breakfast, work on my computer.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't leave the hotel. And then, and then by that time it was like 5, 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then I would, you know, I was kind of broke at the time. So I would literally eat one meal. I would pay for one meal and then I would eat two at the club.
Yeah.
Cause you're there.
You get one to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you're there, you've an early show and a late show.
Oh,
that's two dinners, baby.
Yeah, it is. It is.
That's lunch and dinner for me. I'm eating lunch at 7 o'clock. I mean dinner at 11.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. So that was my experience there. So it's again, couldn't tell you what it was like. I'm excited to go back, but
are you gonna stay downtown Milwaukee this time? Or are you?
I don't think so. I think I'm just going to stay at probably the same hotel I stayed at, which is, it's so close to the club. I don't think I would stay so far away.
Yeah. I mean, that's because that's like, you know, $50, $60 a day in Ubers then.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, luckily, it's one show. So I'm very, it's funny to be like one night only, one show, one opportunity. But I'm very excited. Yeah. If anyone's listening or watching, I please come out. It's going to be a really fun show. This tour has been like the time of my life, and these shows have been so much fun. And I promise I'll be funny. I won't suck. You'll have a good time.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it. What kind of topics could you give people a teaser about? Like, what sort of, you know, like maybe a bit that you've got that you're sort of like, I'm excited about this one. Maybe you don't have it like totally locked in yet, but you're kind of excited about one that's going to be dangerous to watch. Like it could go either way.
you know, dude, I don't know, man. For these shows, like I don't have a ton of that right now because I don't want to like mess around. Like yeah. The jokes I'm doing, like these are big shows for me. Like this is my first tour. Like there ain't like, we'll see how this joke goes. There's not a lot of that. Okay. No, you know what that is? That's the crowd work.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Fingers crossed this works. Yeah. Because crowd work is just gambling. So you're like, hopefully this is funny. Hopefully this works. You know, so if I had jokes in my act that were like that, I would lose my mind.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's not a lot of that. But in terms of like topics and stuff, I have this thing where I think a lot of comedians nowadays, they love to like push the envelope. They love to be offensive. They love to get that noise of the crowd to go like, ooh, or like, I can't believe, like that kind of outrage type of vibe. And I so don't relate to that.
Yeah.
I want everyone there to be like enjoying themselves, feeling good, and like understanding what I'm talking about. I want everybody in the room to be like, oh, I've been there. Like everyone, whether you're 18 years old or whether you're 70 years old, I want everyone to be like, oh, dude, I've so been there. Whether it's about sex, even if I talk about sex, it's very silly. I want people to laugh about it instead of like, oh, I'm with my dad. This is weird. Like, no, I'm being very silly about it.
Yeah,
it's anything about school, just growing up, or just even just on like a day-to-day basis, traveling, like what it's really like to be a comedian. I like to talk about that because it's may not be the most relatable, but I think the feelings of being a comedian and can translate into any occupation. So those are kind of the things I'm toying with now. But again, I like just people just like all being, I like when everyone's on the same page.
Yeah.
I like when a group of 300 people are all like, oh dude, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Get the relatability aspect.
Yeah. I like that a lot. It makes you comfortable.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, man. Take care.
All right. Talk soon, dude.
All right. Bye.
All right. Well, I want to thank Will for coming on the podcast. I had a lot of fun with him, and make sure you follow him on all the platforms. Colleen, where can we follow Will?
Will, you can go to his website, thewillburkhart.com. That's where he has all of his socials linked up, but he's on every platform at Will Burkhart. Check out the shows he's got coming up. He has Wisconsin this weekend, but there's some other Midwest shows in the near future. Follow us on all platforms at Krebsguest and at Charlie Barons
and
Mad Fuck Minute
and at Colleen Murr.
I actually changed it.
What is it now?
Colleen Maraca. My mom goes, nobody's going to know who you are if you're Colleen Murr.
That's true. Your mom's smart.
Janet. Shout out, Janet.
Shout out, Janet.
But yeah, so you can if you want. I don't really care, but make sure you follow us.
She cares. I wasn't following her. It was an issue. Anyway.
Find us on all platforms at Krebsguest, at Charlie Barons, at Manitowoc Minute. Also, check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/CharlieBarons, so you can get exclusive content that you won't get anywhere else.
Folks, it's just been awesome. Thank you so much for listening again. Colleen, where are you laughing? Sometimes I think Colleen laughs at me, not with me. And by sometimes...
Definitely.
I mean all the time. Folks, thank you for listening to me, too. Thank you for laughing at me yourself. And just thank you for listening. We really appreciate you. Shout out to Hannah Milos for editing these podcasts.
Yeah, sorry, Hannah.
And
this sorry, one's a really Hannah. Bad one.
So we should call the podcast. Sorry Hannah.
Yeah.
And thank you, Colleen, for all your wonderful notes and your assistance and all.
Thank you, Charlie, for taking it so well.
You are a great, great, great.
Stop.
co-host of the Krebscast. The end.
Thanks so much. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
So roll out the barrel and strike up the band. Heavens praise Lombardi, the pack is back again. And on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
I always wondered if Bango is offended when I wore blaze orange to a Bucks game. I'm like, sorry, guy, it's my Sunday's best. What can I do?
Hi, this is Lindsay Kynard at 5:40 a.m. and 101.1 FM WAUK The Shaw. Here are upcoming events happening in the area. Come celebrate 414 Day this Friday, April 14th, with various exciting events and activities throughout downtown Milwaukee. Take part in shuffleboard or axe throwing at the North Shore Club at 230 East Pittsburgh Avenue in Walker's Point, which is presented by Bars and Recreation. Love to sing? Well, come sing your heart out at Amped, located at 910 West Juno Avenue, and take advantage of special 414-day pricing for karaoke.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.